This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Men's Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. My man, hopefully today we get some clear air in your neck of the woods and along a lot of these parts here in the United States and also our friends and neighbors to the north in Canada. Lots to get to here. We're going to have Stephen Hennessy join the program later on this morning. We'll get a live update from the British Open, the Open Championship, as they call it. And we do have some history potentially in the making there that we'll get to here. Anthony DeBundo is going to join the program as well to break down two more matches in the FIFA World Cup. One that everybody's talking about, certainly with Argentina and Spain. And yes, there is another one, maybe with golden boot implications for England and France. But potentially a record round is underway as we speak. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
All right, Jensen, right now, Scottie Scheffler is still the betting favorite to win this edition of the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. But ironically, the last time we played at Royal Birkdale was 2017. And the lowest recorded round in the history of the British Open happened at that tournament in 2017. It was Brendan Grace who shot a 62. Well, the Australian Lucas Herbert right now is through 14 holes, and he is 8 under par, a clean card. He is 8 under for the round, 8 birdies, no bogeys, Jensen. He's got another par 5 to play. We could be looking potentially at a 61, and we've never seen that in the history of the British Open.
Yeah, kind of hope he comes back to the pack a little bit, because we've got a couple of our outrights that have really started well today, too. Colin Morikawa, for me, have him at 31-1 to win the tournament. He is currently 3-under for the day, 5-under for the tournament. That makes him tied for third. Patrick Reed, who you and I have at a very large number to win this tournament, I believe I've got him at 62-1. He is 6-under for the day, the second lowest round out on the golf course. He is now tied for seventh at 4-under for the championship. We were looking at the cut line. It's kind of been bouncing back and forth between even par and one over. And as it pertains to our no-fly zone candidates, Brooks Koepka, right now, if it stayed there, he is one over for the tournament, and he is through 11 holes now. So it could be teetering right there. I know you're looking at Xander Schauffele, who is also even for the day, but one over for the championship. We will monitor that as we move forward.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating because some big names. Rory looks like he might be moving closer and closer to being safe inside that cut line. He's back to even par for the championship. But again, if it moves to even, you don't want to be sitting on that with a couple holes to play. You just never know what could happen. We'll keep you updated there. And again, Stephen Hennessy is going to join us later on this morning to tell if there's any ads that we should make. I don't know. Should we think about Lucas Herbert right now? Because he looks like the guy to beat at Royal Birkdale. We assume Spain is now the team to beat on Sunday when we get to the World Cup final. They are the betting favorite at -$1.50 to hoist the cup. Now, again, to do it in regulation, get a smaller number there. But you're going up against Messi. You're going up against Argentina. You're going up against a team that just figures out a way, kind of despite all odds, to get it done. They did it against England with a late comeback and a late flurry, Jensen. I guess game script would go part and parcel here with the handicap as to how we think this thing's going to play out.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet, but I wrote down three specific wagers that I think I'm going to get to for the final. I think it's going to be a multi-unit play on Spain to win, to lift the trophy, if you will, bypassing the 90 minutes in case it is a draw there and we need extra time. God help us if the final comes down to penalty kicks. How crazy would that be? I hearken back to the elite defensive control and the record, only one goal conceded for La Roja so far. So I think that's where I'm getting there. I do like the under correlated play there at 2.5 at a little juicy price. And then I may get cute, a little half money play, half unit play, I should say. Spain to lift the trophy and parlay that with the under 2.5. That's a nice little plus 172 price on DraftKings right now. As it pertains to the third place match, I think I could take Mbappe to score any time. I think there's enough ego there that he's going to try and at least be the top goal scorer, if not have an outside chance at the golden boot here. So we'll see kind of where it works. We'll talk a little daily docket, why it's a different play. Golden boot winner versus top goal scorer, because they are drastically different prices at a lot of different sports books in that regard.
And very quickly, Jensen, because I think it's a point worth noting, because I was inquiring about maybe Mbappe removing himself from the contest, but in that anytime goal scorer, you can't get kind of handcuffed, if you will, to his replacement, correct?
FanDuel does a super sub insurance where if your player that you bet the goal scorer on is subbed off, then it carries over for that substitute. So another way to kind of get a little multiple bites at the apple, if you will. So we'll see kind of where, again, I won't make that play until I see what the starting 11 is revealed before the game on Saturday afternoon.
You notice I'm already into the fantasy football talk, the handcuffing for the running backs, right? We're already getting in that mentality. Second half of the baseball season, Jensen, is underway. Mets get the win yesterday, 4-1. Boy, the air conditions in Philadelphia were not good, as we know, in the Northeast. They've not been good as well, but they get the game in. Christian Scott was fantastic in this win for the Mets. He's kind of been a bright spot, maybe with Nolan McClain, that you could look at some young guys there in that rotation. But Jensen, we talked about a little bit off the top of the show as well. When we saw this, that we were wondering, are the Mets going to stand pat? Are they going to answer calls? Sounds like Christian Scott, if you're calling about him, they're going to hang up the phone on you.
Yeah, there's only a handful of guys that they'll entertain, or they will not entertain, I should say. And yes, he's one of them. AJ Ewing, Carson Benj, Juan Soto, Nolan McClain. And not a surprise, the fixtures for the future are where they are. Congrats. One play yesterday. The under 10 gets home with no sweat whatsoever. So we're 1-0 on baseball bets to start the second half.
Yeah, there we go. And the Mets undefeated in the second half. Best team so far in the second half. But that's all we have as Met fans to hang our hats on. Speaking of young guns and futures and cornerstones, I think the Reds feel like they've got theirs in Chase Burns, and they have paid him handsomely to do that in 7 years, $105 million extension. Jensen, look, I think we'll get to the business of baseball in a second, but from a kind of phenom type thing, where are you on Chase Burns? Because I get it. I don't know if he's going to win the Cy Young this year with the Miz and some of these other young guns. I don't want to see his form below that radar, but man, has he been impressive here in his short stint as a hurler for the Reds.
Right now, Chase Burns 22-1 in the National League Cy Young market on DraftKings, trailing just Zach Wheeler and Chris Sale, who are 14-1 apiece. Christopher Sanchez is 6-1, and Jacob Mizorowski, as you alluded to, almost a $4 favorite. That has come down a little bit. He was upwards of $5 before the All-Star break. So again, a little issue of workload for him. Dave, we just want to get this out of the way. In a Lewis Ross administration, we don't serve propaganda. Unfortunately, the ownership and MLB commissioner's office want to do that. If you're an MLB.TV subscriber, you were served all kinds of propaganda about why a salary cap is needed because, you know, the mid and small market teams are not able to survive. Just would like to put it on the record. That contract that Chase Burns just agreed to is the third largest guarantee in Cincinnati Reds history. To small market team. I guess that we're going to have to, you know, push back a little bit, owners. Yeah, you know you've got money to spend. It's just a matter of if you can get off your checkbook to do it. So nice ad, though, for the future, as you said, David. We got Burns. We got Hunter Green, Andrew Abbott. You hope Nick Lodolo can be healthy for a whole season moving forward. They got the horses. We got to see what they can do for the offensive resurgence now.
This was such an interesting story that we're seeing come out of Miami. Tyler Hero is no longer in Miami. He's in Milwaukee. But he played with Bam Adebayo for 7 years. He got to an NBA final, got real close to winning some things, and you felt like, oh, well, those guys must get along great. Apparently not so much. And we see this from Shams Charania. Says that an NBA spokesperson, if you don't know what the story is, Bam apparently punched Tyler Hero right there in the face. And, we're going to let those guys handle their business. There's going to be no action taken from the league. Pat Riley, of course, who does a great job of running the Miami Heat and traded away Tyler Hero to Milwaukee, mentioned that. And also in the same breath, could they be going after maybe the biggest free agent still left in the NBA offseason?
I was remiss in mentioning one guy, and I don't want to get knocked out. you know, Bam was one of those guys that came in here too. Yeah, we landed the plane. Now there's another one we have to land, but I just want to welcome Giannis.
Okay, so that's an introductory press conference for Giannis. We're talking about let's not get knocked out by Bam Adebayo, and maybe we get another plane here with LeBron James. I think you in Cleveland would say that's fine, but it would be, you know, it's interesting if he went back to Miami, not just talking about going back home to Cleveland. It sounds like that's what Pat Riley is alluding to there, Jensen.
Just checking some of the prediction markets here, Dave. We have had a pretty big surge in the last couple of days from the Golden State Warriors. They are now level at 33% with the Cleveland Cavaliers on Kelce, actually. And that's kind of interesting development here. Miami is the third option at 16%, and they have kind of moved up a little bit as well. But that's kind of significant. I know there's a social media clip out there where Steve Kerr was driving out and had his window rolled down and made mention like, oh, yeah, we got LeBron. You can put that on social media. We'll see. It's so fluctuating. Can we be done with it already? I'm so sick and tired of the narcissist that is LeBron James. It's always about him. Let's move on. Other business of the offseason to attend to.
I did not think we'd still be talking about LeBron at this stage of the offseason as to where he would be playing, but that's what we're talking about. That's what Pat Riley's talking about. We'll figure out exactly where that plane lands, as Riley referenced. Okay, when we come back, Jensen, let's go to our friends in Detroit, those Motor City Kitties. What type of bounce-back year could Dan Campbell and company be in store? We'll discuss next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Cindy VSiN by the Books, Winner's Circle Proxy, and VSiN are giving away two incredible prize packages that will put two lucky fans into the world's biggest football contest in the world for free. One winner is going to receive a $1,000 entry in a Circa Survivor. Another one's going to get a $1,000 entry into Circa Millions. Now, both winners will receive a full season Winner's Circle Proxy service, a VSiN studio tour, a free month of VSiN Pro. You can enter by Sunday, August 2nd for your chance to win. You can visit winnercircleproxy.com/VSiN to enter today. That's winnercircleproxy.com/VSiN. Let me ask you this, Jensen. Now, it says a VSiN studio tour that comes in this great prize package from VSiN and Winner Circle Proxy. What if they said, we want to tour the Mint Gaming Hall, the Circus Sports right there in Franklin, in Kentucky? Would you come back for said studio tour if they choose this one over our friends back home in Las Vegas?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We would need every show on the network to hype that up. We'd need a little live camera there. It would be a great way. You know what? We should probably do a week of shows. Everyone should come. Bring the entire weekday and weekend circuit.
I agree.
For a week. And maybe we should do that in football season or college basketball season. Get the powers that be. That would be fun. Hey, the hotel is right on property there, so you don't have to worry about that. Just getting from the... And oh, by the way, we can break some bread there on site, or a host of different places in downtown Nashville. Let's make it happen, people. Love to see where that could go.
We're saying, look, we get it. If you want to choose the Vegas studio, if you win this prize package, we get it, but you can choose us too. We're right here. Detroit might be that forgotten team. Hey, we're still right here. And I wonder if they still are, Dan Campbell, those Motor City Kitties, a team that we should keep on the periphery this year, because a down year last year. Let's make no bones about that for the Lions. I know they had injuries, but Jensen, you can kind of make that case about a lot of teams out there in the National Football League. They're not going to make excuses and or give you any pity. Look at the win total, right back up to 10.5 for this team that only won 9 a year ago. To make the playoffs, you got to lay $2, $2.05 right now to make the postseason, to win the North, which the Bears won a year ago, plus $1.50 to win the NFC and get to the Super Bowl. Don't think we've ever seen that happen in the history of Detroit football. That would be plus $8.50 to do something we've never seen before, and obviously win it, which has never happened, 17-1. History is never on this team's side, Jensen. And I know that Dan Campbell, when he took over the job there, that was one of the things, and I know people laughed about it, the bite in the kneecaps. Go back to that introductory press conference years ago. He talked about changing the culture in Detroit. They were close 3 years ago. I feel like they've taken a couple steps back since then, Jensen. In order to take that step back forward, do you think they have enough in-house to get that done this year?
Listen, this is one of the intriguing stops on our daily gridiron, because I think this division, we've said, and I don't think it's overstating it, it could be the most competitive division in football. And you know, knowing what Chicago did last year, Green Bay looking for a bounce back, and from the injury bug, knowing that Minnesota, who we just talked about this week, is in that position. If they get the quarterback right, boy, the weapons around them look pretty good. And now you see where the Lions are and kind of the darlings of a year or so ago, and a lot of people high on this squad. Plenty of changes, specifically on the offensive side in the coaching ranks here. You get the new OC in Drew Petzing coming over from Arizona, passing game coordinator Mike Kafka, formerly the interim head coach there for the New York Football Giants. John Morton was let go. Calvin Shepard remains as the DC there. So some stabilization on the defensive side. But I think the offensive line overhaul was something we looked at last year, and they really made it their priority this offseason. You go and get Cade Mays from the Panthers, 3 years, $25 million to start as your center. Larry Borum and Ben Bartsch come over as offensive tackle and guard reinforcements. They did trade David Montgomery to Houston and I think Juice Scruggs could be a center slash guard, however they want to deploy him out there. Plus, they get the 2026 fourth rounder, the 2027 seventh. Just again, another good little cap move there in draft capital to be able to acquire. And then they drafted Blake Miller from Clemson, number 17 overall offensive tackle. He's expected, Dave, I think from the reports we've seen, that he will start at right tackle. And of course, the all pro, one of the greatest to do it, Penei Sewell, will slide to that left tackle spot. So I would say mission accomplished on paper. This was what they wanted to do. You get the line of scrimmage right, and they can go back to doing what they did really well with running the football. Let Jahmyr Gibbs now take over as that lead back. And for fantasy implications, you don't got to worry about David Montgomery anymore. So this is a true three-down back situation. They did bring an Isaiah Pacheco in on a one-year deal. So, Dave, to me, they addressed the biggest need. Now when you look at the schedule, they should be able to take advantage early on. They have the Saints at home opening week. Then they got to go to Buffalo. It's going to be a fun one there to open up the new stadium. But then it's a pretty, I don't want to say easy, but it's very advantageous. Week three against the Jets. Then they've got the Panthers. Then they got the Cardinals. They don't play a divisional game until week six against the Green Bay Packers. So they should be in great shape. Anxious, your thoughts just on the expectations, because on paper, Dave, it's the easiest schedule in football, schedule strength-wise. Where do you have them in your crystal ball this year?
My worry about that, and again, it's really smart to point it out. I'm concerned that this year's football teams that they're going to play that have that quote-unquote weakest schedule will not be the same the following year. And so not that I throw it out completely with the bathwater here, the baby of the strength of schedule, but I don't think these teams are going to be the same that we can judge that off from a year ago. You hit on a couple key points for me, which is one, the offensive line. And you mentioned getting back to what they do. Well, they used to hammer you, right, with that two-headed monster, and then they didn't do that last year. And then remember Johnny Morton? We talked about it in real time as it was happening. They got off on the good foot, and Johnny had been there, so we thought there was continuity of the offense coordinator. And then I felt like Dan Campbell panicked last year. when he fired Johnny Morton early in the year when things were still kind of going well. And I remember we talked about it specifically on the show. We ran a soundbite from Dan that said, hey, I'm going to be in charge of this thing. If it goes bad, it's on me. Guess what? It went bad. It's on you. So you made a change when I didn't feel like they needed to make a change. And I remember saying, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. You're the head coach. And you felt like you could get better by calling the plays. They didn't. I'm not saying that he was worse than Johnny Morton calling the plays, but the proof is in the pudding, and it did not pan out that way. So now you go in and get Drew Petsing coming in from Arizona. And offensively, I think you could look at some of the things that Drew did there in Arizona with Jacoby Brissett and kind of pass happy and the way that they had that. And I look at that and I go, well, if Drew runs that style of offense here, that's not exactly what Dan Campbell normally likes, because he is normally one of those run first guys. Everything's off play action. We get everything off the run game to set it up for Jared Goff. Well, Drew is kind of different normally in the way that he calls offense. So I'm thinking that this offense is going to be completely new. It's going to look very different than what we've seen in years past. And what I see happening, Jensen, is a lot of drop back from Jared Goff and a lot of getting the ball out of his hands quickly. And that could be Jahmyr Gibbs in the pass game. That could be getting the ball out quickly, but not these, you know, deep set plays, play action off of the run game where you throw the ball over the top, which we've seen a lot from Jared Goff in years past. I don't know, Jensen, that this offense is going to look exactly the same as we're accustomed to. And because of that, I'm a little nervy about playing a win total over 10.5 with this football team, because I thought Dan Campbell got a lot of things wrong. I like Dan, but we're going to call a spade, and he said, put it on me. If it doesn't go well, I'm going to put it on you. And I feel like it's got to look better, and hopefully with the hiring of the offensive coordinator, it's going to look very different than it looked a year ago.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so I'd love to ask you this, because we always look to map out certain spots, but if you are in Circuit Survivor and you're in leagues that have to hold teams back for, you know, the Thanksgiving week or Christmas, oof, little Bears, Lions, you holding Detroit for Thanksgiving Day. Where are you mapping out Survivor usage for the Lions this year?
I mean, it's normally one of those tenets, right, that if you're in there, you don't want to use a team that you're going to have to use for one of those standalone Thanksgiving Day games. You don't want to use them early. But do you really want to trust them in that spot? I mean, look, if you get that far, it's probably a good problem to have, Jensen. This would be a team that I probably would try to hold because of the rules. Now, look, if your rules are different and it does not equate that to be a standalone, then I think you could look earlier. You could look week three, say, against the Jets. You can look at the last column late in the year at home against the Titans, perhaps. Could be spots if you wanted to save the lines till later in the year. But, Jensen, I'm going to wait on them because I'm a little nervy about what this football team, the way they closed last year. And I think a lot of us in the betting market are assuming that they're just going to bounce back to kind of pre-last year Lions. And I think you know the saying, when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me, right? So they made an ass out of me last year. I hope the Lions don't do that again this year, and expecting the bounce back that might not come. You are watching By the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're tuned in to VSiN By the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN By the Books on this Friday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. Going to have Stephen Hennessy join the program in the next hour. Breakdown everything going on right now at the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. And what is happening at Royal Birkdale is Lucas Herbert has three holes to play. He is currently 8 under par, 8 birdies, no bogeys on his round so far today. If he pars out, Jensen, over the next three holes, that would tie a course record of 62 set back in 2017 by Brendan Grace. If he goes 1 under and he's got a par 5 to play, we could see history in the making. He is the outright leader right now at the British Open. We'll update that. But we got plenty to get to in the world of soccer, and also some very interesting news in the world of basketball. That's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Docket.
Your snapshot of odds, trends, and futures. This is the Daily Docket.
I think most of the people we've talked to will talk to Anthony DeBundo later on, too, about this World Cup. I don't know that a third-place game is necessary. We will get one between England and France. But it does feel odd, Jensen, when everybody is just talking about Argentina and Spain, and, oh, by the way, there is a second game. Could you make the argument that the, quote-unquote, easier game to handicap is the one that has less meaning?
No, actually. I would say the easier one to handicap is the one that has all of the implications riding on it. Let's start with the third-place match, because I do think this is ripe for I still think France is the side, if you're picking a side, I still think France is that because of the emotional issues that it was such a crash out for England, the way they lost, okay, to Argentina. Yes. And I think that in of itself, like, France just got dominated, period. Like, I think they were tuned out, you know, with about 15 minutes left to go. So it was like, okay, we're not winning. It is what it is. England, because you had the lead and you blew it the way that you did, mentally, where are you for Thomas Tuchel's crew to get in there? So here are the three bets I wrote down. I'll get your thoughts on it. I think it's a multi-unit play on Mbappe because there's still enough ego there that he would want at least top goal scorer, if not an outside chance of getting the golden boot. Secondly, I think France to win for probably a unit and a half is probably where I would get to if I'm going to play it for the reasons I just stated. I just don't know if England have the heart in it or the mindset of we really want to compete because of what just happened. And then finally, I would look at an over 2.5 goals or both teams to score, because I do think, and I believe history would tell us, in these third place matches, it would be a little more open, if you will, because you don't have, you know, hey, if we don't win, then we're going home. You know, it's just like, let's go. This is kind of an exhibition, right, if you will. So that's where I would, portion it, Dave. I would go multiple units on Mbappe for an anytime goal scorer. I would also take a unit and a half on France to win, and then I would probably do just a straight unit on the over 2.5, just knowing where these two sides are mentally.
You know, and that's the match, of course, tomorrow that we're talking about here with England and France. I say this all the time in context with the NFL, and I'm completely picking up what you're putting down, and I call it the hangover effect, where sometimes one loss boils over into two. Certainly the week before, if you felt like, man, that's a game we had won. And it's hard to put, it's just human nature. I think it's hard to put that aside and go, all right, let me get back up and get ready for next week. And that never happened. So I think your point about England is well said. And the fact that it should be, you hate to say it this way if you're France, we got beat by a better team. So that's kind of easier to stomach, you would think. Now, look, I'm sure they're saying we didn't play our best game. We know we could play Spain, but you played them three times and you lost. Before this World Cup, you played them twice and you lost two as well. So I think it's hard to make the argument that France was actually the better team all along and just kind of had a bad day. So I think almost you can stomach that. But then you're going to go, well, we know we're better than England. So I'm with you on that maybe France is a way to look in that one. And then when we get to Argentina and Spain, and I've talked about this in context with, say, a great player, an all-time great player in Messi, like a Jordan, like a LeBron, like an MJ, when you get to the final stage of your team event. So it's still a team event, but you have that one star of stars. Jensen, how do you think Spain attacks him? Do they attack him and say, you know what? Our defense is so good. We don't need to overextend on the great Messi, and we can go ahead and mark everybody else up and play you guys straight up.
They haven't changed who they are. And I think that's been the calling card for Spain, regardless of opponent, regardless of attacking structure. Spain hasn't changed, and I would say how technically sound they've been, their possession, they press when they need to. I still can't get over that they've only conceded one goal.
That's amazing.
That is still wild to think. And so why get in front of this freight train of being able to, you know, just limit not only opportunities, but just shots on target, you know, for opposition? And hey, Argentina has been, you know, that black widow, man, they just will get you right at the end, and that's been what they've done here in this tournament. As I handicap, I don't think I'm getting anywhere on player props just because Spain have been so stingy on allowing goals. So it's hard for me to get there. What I would do, though, and I do think Spain ends up winning it on Sunday, I will probably play Spain, and I'll probably lay the $1.50. What's that? At DraftKings, $1.50 right now. Probably a multi-unit play on Spain to win, you know, lift the trophy. I will play the under. Just I don't think much changes here, Dave. I think Spain hold on to the ball. They find their opportunities when they do it. They're not going to be overzealous in trying to send numbers forward. It's just not been their style so far. So I would say under 2.5 in the 90 minutes plus stoppage time for a unit and a half. And then I'll probably get to that parlay of Spain to lift the trophy and the under 2.5 parlay together.
If you saw my mouth drop, if you're watching on FanDuel Sports Network or on YouTube TV, that's because Lucas Herbert has just made another birdie. He is now 9 under par with 2 holes to play. Currently, Jensen Lewis, if he just pars the par 5 and the par 4 finishing hole, he will shoot a 61, which will be the best round in the history of Open Championship golf. And think about the history of Open Championship golf, by the way. The birthplace of golf here was over in Europe. He has now moved to co-favorites in the betting market with Scottie Scheffler at plus 440. The Australian, Lucas Herbert, is now 9 under par. He is 3 shots clear of Jackson Subra, who's in the house at 6 under. We are watching potentially history unfold right before our very eyes. We'll get back to that here in a little bit. But Giannis Antetokounmpo was introduced yesterday down there in South Beach with Pat Riley, who's such an interesting guy. Right. And you look about, you know, Pat's days with New York and certainly with the Lakers and now with the Heat. And he is a winner. And, you know, Pat's not going to mince words with you here. And if he wants a star, he normally goes to get a star. Well, he's got his star now in Giannis. And Giannis talked about a conversation that he felt interesting with the great Pat Riley.
You know, getting the phone call from Mr. Pat, it gave me a lot of closure of like, OK, now it's a new beginning. And I was, you know, be a little bit vulnerable with him. I was like, you know, I know you guys think I'm this like big, tough beast, big plane, you know, and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm human, I have my emotion, and I was like, I'm scared, you know, I'm kind of scared. This is different. I never expected, obviously, I have, you know, so much respect for you. And when I was younger, I told him, I said, when I was younger, we had the practice here, and I went to your office, and I was like stooping around, you know, to kind of see what the great Pat Riley was about, because his office is right there next to the court. We had the conversation. I told him I'm excited. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to do whatever I can for the team to respect and you guys' culture and history. And hopefully I can leave a mark here.
Jensen, you know me well enough by now. You know, I like that when you know your history, when you pay respects to people that have kind of paved ways for you when you're younger in the game. To hear that from Giannis, that's got to be a really good sign if you're a Miami Heat fan, that like part of the allure was the great Pat Riley and to kind of know what he's all about. What do you make of that? Because I think sometimes we get in the athlete bubble of today and the athlete's about the athlete and they're about their paycheck. And that's it. It feels like there's something more there with Giannis and Pat Riley.
Going to be interesting to see what he does. Again, always trying to fit in a new place, going to take some time. I don't think they're done. Business of the offseason, not done for the Heat. But anxious to see kind of what they do from, you know, the complimentary pieces at this point. Is it LeBron James? That's a lot of mouths to feed for what they've got down there. But hey, when healthy, still one of the most dominant players in the entire association.
By the way, that vulnerability of an athlete where he says, I'm scared to Pat Riley, is that something normally we just don't hear athletes say that, not at that level, right?
Yeah, he's going to be fun to watch. And again, it's a place where there's a lot of things to do, but much different media scrutiny than where he was in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah. By the way, you were never scared. I know that. You just took the ball whenever they said, here, Jensen, here's the ball. Go take it and get on the mound and give me 3 outs. When we come back, we got a great matchup in Oklahoma this weekend in the UFC. We'll break it down next right here. VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Oh, it is getting real now. We are on a historical watch right now at the Open Championship. Lucas Herbert is 9-under par. He's playing the 17th hole. It's the par 5. And Jensen, we're kind of split-screening this thing to keep you updated here, people. I just kind of pulled that approach on 17. A little wide left, so he's going to try to get up and down. If he did do that, it would be for 10-under, but he might be in a spot of bother, as they say, right now in the 17th hole. He's at 9-under par. Again, nobody in the history of the British Open has ever shot 61 or better in a singular round of golf. Lucas Herbert is trying to do that. Scottie Scheffler, I do not believe, is teed off as of yet. And we do have some notables that might miss the cut. Wyndham Clark's a guy I thought would play very well this week. He is not. He's 7-over par. He's going to miss the cut for sure. And Jensen, maybe a bigger shock than those guys is Matty Fitz. Matt Fitzpatrick in all sorts of trouble here. That might be the biggest surprise to date if that holds and he misses the cut.
Yeah, I am. I just got in. DraftKings has a boost, an all-purpose boost, I believe, today at 25%. I just took Tyrrell Hatton, boosted to almost 3-1, plus 294 exact odds that I got for a half unit at a top 10, including ties, finish here. Again, we were very high on him at the beginning of this week, at least I was. And I just think knowing where we are with some of these numbers, I think he lines up pretty well, Dave, with, you know, where we could be. So again, Hatton going to be teeing off right after we are done, I believe.
Okay.
And I think he is one. Yeah, he's 1-under. So he's tied for 34th right now. But to get into the top 10, he would just need he'd need a minus 4. So he had 4-under. Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
So I think he's in good shape. So that's where I added 10:04 Eastern tee time. Tyrrell Hatton, a live ad for me for a half unit, boosted to almost 3-1.
And again, that's for the tournament, right? Top 10 for the tournament that
correct.
You have?
Yes, correct.
Oh, I absolutely love that play here, Jensen. I think a very smart ad there. Because again, not saying Lucas Herbert can't run away and hide from everybody, but if he has a bad round, boy, you could be looking at a lot of guys fighting for the top spot here. Kyle Morikawa is well positioned as well. He's sitting at 5-under par. Jackson Suber's in the house at 6-under par. So some Americans right now pushing the Australian. Let's get to the UFC, because you normally don't get this, Jensen, where you've got two former champions doing battle this Sunday. And I know that all the talk, we're still exhaling with Conor McGregor and Max Holloway from a week ago. It's a really interesting card. Dricus du Plessis, the South African, is minus 250 against Kamaru Usman. Usman's one of the greatest 170 champions we've ever had. He's moved up to weight in his elder years here to 185, and yet he's looked pretty good moving up to 185. I know there's concerns about his knees. I had Doug Vasquez on First Strike this week, and we talked about this very intriguing main event. Very interesting main event that we're going to get in Oklahoma this weekend here with Dricus du Plessis, former champion of the world, against another guy that was down a weight class, one of the best that we've ever seen at 170 and now moving up in weight here. When you see Kamaru Usman in this version of Kamaru against DDP, what do you make of the ultimate grappler back in the day? And then we question his knees. Can he still be that same guy? But he's looked better and better as he's moved up a weight class.
Yeah, I mean, he looked great in his last fight out against Joaquin Buckley. I believe he was the underdog going into that fight and was able to pretty much ragdoll Joaquin Buckley. I am on the DDP side here. I think it was weird that Kamaru Usman, he is at the end of his career. He's getting up there in age, obviously a legend. You could put him in the conversation for the best welterweight of all time when he was on his run. But the fact that he was kind of wishy-washy, waiting possibly for that Islam Makhachev shot at 170 and kind of hesitated to go back up and fight DDP, and I don't blame him. I mean, DDP lost to Khamzat. We know what happened in that fight. I do think that was a bit of an anomaly for DDP. But DDP is the younger, fresher guy. I got a chance to speak to him yesterday and I saw a change in his demeanor. He seems very more calm and relaxed and more praiseful to his opponents. He was very respectful when talking about his loss to Khamzat and his and his upcoming opponent in Kamaru. So I am heavy on the DDP side here, and I like him to probably get a finish at some point.
There it is. We'll find out if he's going to be able to get that finish from Doug Vasquez. Shameless plug. Please check out First Strike with me and Rob Moreno, a weekly here on the network, wherever you get your podcast. Great show. Really enjoy doing it with Rob every week. El Modelo. He's got his Modelo plays, too, that we're actually being able to show now on First Strike. So, Jensen, you can actually see those numbers in real time. A nice addition to the First Strike podcast every week with Rob. But I kind of see it the same way here with Dricus du Plessis in the main event. Normally, I don't like to back 250 favorites, but remember, I did back Max Holloway last week in this spot against Conor McGregor. I got him at 205. Remember, he ballooned almost to a $3 betting favorite. I have so much respect for a guy like Kamaru Usman, but DDP is one of the most awkward fighters we've seen at 185. And he's just a big, I don't want to say clumsier, but he's like a bigger kind of lumbering guy out there, but he can kind of fight you both ways. So the hands aren't classic with the hands. It's not necessarily aesthetically pleasing to the eyes, but he can be very effective. He's beaten some of the best middleweights we've ever seen, like a Robert Whittaker. We know he's beaten Sean Strickland twice to win the belt. I would argue I thought Strickland won the first fight. Clearly, he won the second fight. So he's been in with the very best in this 185-pound division. Remember, he submitted Israel Adesanya late in that fight in the fourth round there. So, Jensen, I kind of see it the same way, that maybe late DDP might be able to get a stoppage of Kamaru Usman, and I have a ton of respect for the former 170-pound champion. I just don't think at this age and this stage of his career that he's going to be able to turn back the hands of time and upset DDP, who I believe believes that, I know he didn't look great against Chimaev, even though he went all five rounds, that after what we've seen happen with Chimaev against Sean Strickland, you do that MMA math, I think DDP thinks, if I beat Usman here, I'm going to be right back in title contention. And I think that's the way he's looking to springboard here Saturday in Oklahoma. So again, please check out First Strike wherever you get those podcasts. Jensen, I do want to update what's going on at the British Open very quickly, because I just saw that Lucas Herbert on 17, I'd mentioned he was in a little bit of trouble. He hit his flop shot to about 4 feet. He's going to have a relatively short putt to get to 10 under par, Jensen Lewis. So again, we'll see here. We're in real time here, and we'll talk to Stephen Hennessy later on this hour. We're getting to uncharted territory here. If you get uncharted territory, I should say. People always mistake that terminology. That he should be getting to 10 under par. I don't think anybody saw this coming, not only on this golf course, but any major championship setup.
Remarkable. Updating also, that cut line still at even from what it's looking like, bouncing back and forth here. Brooks Koepka now 2 over through 13. He was one of our no-fly zone plays. I played him to miss the cut. Barring something miraculous here in the last five holes, he is going to be out. Matty Fitzpatrick, it bears repeating, remember, so outspoken about how gambling and betting is a huge issue that these golfers are facing. I'm wondering if the live bets and the pre-tournament wagers on Matt Fitzpatrick were too much for him to bear. And as one of the guys that was looked at to be one of the favorites to win here, it looks like that is going to be too much for him to overcome. All those live bets and all those unruly fans having Peronis out on the course, too much for Matt Fitzpatrick to overcome. I'm sure we'll hear why live betting and pre-tournament betting needs to go away for his poor performance. On the other side of it, a couple of guys you and I very high on. Chris Goddard, man, it's been back and forth for him, right? Bogey on 13 after a birdie on the par 3 12. He's still one under, so he's hanging around here. Ludvig Åberg is 2 under for the tournament, 3 under for the day through 13. That's a good one. We will continue to have a watchful eye on our boy Patrick Reed, who is just bogeyed, unfortunately, on the 16th. So he drops a shot back, but he has had a great one of the low rounds of the day. And Colin Morikawa also gave back a shot on the 15th. But these are looking really good for us. Our no-fly zones are going to be one we follow. Victor Hovland, also a big, juicy miss-the-cut play for me. He will tee off here in about an hour. He's at even par, right on the cut line. Rory McIlroy, 2 under, right on even par for the tournament. Oh, he's on the cut line too. So let's see what happens. A lot of golf this afternoon that we will be following for sure.
We just had a jump on the screen. That's because Lucas Herbert missed that birdie putt on 17. He did tap in for par, so he's at 9 under par with one hole to play. But he just went from the co-favorite with Scottie Scheffler back to over a 6-1 betting choice here. And those are the only two guys, Scottie Scheffler and Lucas Herbert, on your live numbers that are single digits to win this tournament. And right now, Scottie Scheffler, before he begins play, is 7 shots back of Lucas Herbert. That's the respect for world number one. So much more to get to. Don't go anywhere. It is VSiN by the Books on the Sports Betting Network.